This is the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, a podcast dude, and usually an all-around functional nerd. Tonight, my guest is very special. I've had her on the Functional Nerds before, but we've never had the opportunity to get her over here on SF Signal that I recall. And so I jumped at the opportunity. Her name is Elizabeth Baer. And Elizabeth, why don't you tell people who you are and what you do?
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Baer, and I tell lies to strangers for money.
Nice.
I am a science fiction and fantasy writer, shockingly enough, and a recovering podcaster.
And is it true? Is it 27 novels?
I have written 27 novels. Not all of them are professionally published.
Oh,
there's actually one that's in a trunk, and some of the others, which may see the light of day sometime, and there are two or three bits of the ongoing Shadow Unit serial that qualify as novels in terms of by Hugo novel length standards, shall we say. So counting all of those things, 27 novels.
And are we ever going to see the trunked novel?
Maybe. It's actually a historical YA that Sarah Monette and I wrote together. That we could never find a publisher for. So if it comes out, it'll have to be self-pubbed, which is a possibility, but there's that whole finding the time to do it thing.
I understand.
Yeah, it's basically Christopher Marlowe, boy detective.
That's cool. So you didn't throw it out there, so I have to throw it out there because I think it's huge. You are a John W. Campbell Award nominee, or no, award winner. You won it in 2005.
Yes.
And then you won a couple of Hugos after that.
I did.
That's awesome.
Thank you. I am very pleased. The readership and the awards nominating community have been very generous to me on a lot of fronts. So I certainly cannot complain there.
That's very cool. Yeah, they've been kind to me too. They gave me one. Well, actually, they gave me two. That it's
claim
awesome.
Claim it.
And the reason we get to chat tonight is you're going to Gen Con.
I am. This is my first Gen Con.
And are you just super excited?
I am. It's ridiculous. Okay, so picture me at the age of 16, you know, a junior in high school. Mm-hmm. And one of my deep bits of nerd cred is that I was the founding president of my high school's RPG club.
Nice.
Which is, I have discovered, still going strong today.
That's awesome.
So, but and we used to like sit around with our copies of Dragon magazine and dream of going to Gen Con. When it seemed like the most incredibly cool thing. Indianapolis was this incredibly exotic place.
And well, I grew up in Fresno, and we didn't have an RPG club. It was just a bunch of us. But what was cool is at 16, I was at Fresno High, and we were playing Dungeons & Dragons in the library. The librarian let us play at lunchtime. That was cool.
I had to actually, like, spin it to my guidance counselor to get the – like, I brought in all of my books and let her read them and was like, here, look, really, it's not satanic. She's like, actually, this is kind of cool. So
one of my favorite teachers, I credit her with just getting me into things like mythology and history. I mean, she was just – you know, there's always that teacher. And she's definitely one of them. And I remember that she saw the Dungeons and Dragons stuff in my backpack. And after class, she's like, oh, Patrick, will you stick around after class? I'm like, sure. And then she starts to have the talk. And I'm thinking, oh, no, this is going to ruin this teacher for me forever. She's going to tell me that Dungeons and Dragons is evil and that I'm worshiping the devil and that all these terrible things are going to happen now. And she says, I noticed that you had Dungeons and Dragons books in your backpack. And I said, yeah. She says, that makes sense. You're really smart.
Aww.
And I went, woohoo!
So sometimes the universe pulls that, right? That ironic fake out on you. Beautiful, beautiful.
So you're going to be at Gen Con, and Gen Con has, the Writer Symposium folks have asked me to do a couple of interviews and kind of build up a little buzz about them. And Gen Con is July 30th through August 2nd. It's at the Indiana Convention Center. And the Writer Symposium is, I guess, has been going on there for a really long time. And it's like a couple, 140, 50 hours worth of extra stuff going on that's all focused on writers, and tons of sci-fi and fantasy folks like yourself are there.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you're doing some different things. What have you got planned as far as the symposium's concerned?
Well, it's actually kind of daunting, because it's like I'm looking at this thing, and you know, and I'm used to Worldcon program, and I've done my share of big conventions. I've done San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con and Phoenix Comic-Con and so forth and so on. But I've never seen this like wall of programming focused on the most minute and specialized aspects of the writer's craft, like, you know, adjectives in you. I don't, you know, so it's going to be interesting. And honestly, I have not internalized my Gen Con schedule. It's three conventions and a book tour in the future for me.
Wow.
So don't tell them, but I haven't actually started thinking about my Gen Con panels yet.
Okay. But they do have you down for like world building, which I think you know something about, just a little bit.
Oh God, I hope so. I rely on other people to tell me whether I'm doing it right or not. And I don't actually have a schedule that just has my stuff on it. Sure. I just have the big schedule, so I have to search for my name. Okay, so we've got some craft stuff. There it looks like there are five tracks.
Wow.
A writer's craft, a business of writing, another writer's craft, how to make a living as a writer.
And see, this is what blows my mind. That is all extra stuff. That's not even like Gen Con itself still has more stuff going on.
Yeah,
it's huge.
It's insane. It's just so much stuff. So much. I mean, just to give you a representative sample of like what. Okay, my first panel is Thursday at 11 a.m. and I'm on the writer's craft, eliciting emotional responses. With John Heffers, Aaron Rosenberg, Chuck Wendig, and Gregory Wilson.
God damn, Wendig.
Going on simultaneously, okay, in the next room, there's Business of Writing, Early Stage Writing Career, What to Expect, which has Kat Rambo, Delilah S. Dawson, Anton Strout, Cameron Hurley, and Scott Lynch on it. And then Writer's Craft, Where to Start the Story, is also going on simultaneously. Wow. with Richard Lee Byers, Maurice Brodus, Monica Valentinelli, Patrick Tomlinson, and Donald Bingle.
Well, and I can, before you go too far, I do have to say that the reason that Wendig is on your panel and Dawson is on another panel on another track is because you do have to keep them separate.
Oh, do they feed off each other?
They go a little nuts.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so they got to be separated.
Well, maybe they're on something together and I can go watch. So, okay, there's also simultaneously, okay, there's also a Brad Bolio doing Writer's Craft, The Structure of Scenes, and the continued How to Make a Living as a Writer seminar.
Wow.
So, I couldn't, it's a good thing they're telling me where to go because otherwise I would have no idea.
Well, do me a favor, if you feel like it, give Maurice a big hug for me.
I will give Maurice a big hug just because he's Maurice. I'll give him one for you too. But
there you go.
He is now that we've sadly lost Hal Clement, I think Maurice Brodus may be the recipient of the nicest man in science fiction award.
He is absolutely a sweetheart. And he always dresses to the T's, you know?
He is such a snappy dresser.
Yep. And I remember at Worldcon, actually Chuck Wendig walked up and was talking to me, and there was a gentleman standing behind him, and I saw him out of the corner of my eye, but I was involved in talking with Chuck and everything. And finally, I'm like, who's this guy's name? And then I realized it's Maurice. And I went, ah, Maurice. And he's like, I was wondering when you were going to get around to noticing me standing here.
You know who else is a snappy dresser?
Hmm.
Ramez Nam.
Really?
He is.
Very cool.
He's of the sort of, you know, the button-down shirt and tie with jeans kind of. Yeah, he's quite a snappy dresser. I got to up my game, you know. I've been trying to move out of this whole T-shirt and cargo pants mode that I've lived in for most of my life, and it's not easy.
It's not, no.
I'm like, I'm in my 40s now. I have to wear pants, but.
Well, I tend to find corporate jobs as my day job, and they tend to be very kind of conservative.
Yeah.
And so I rebel. I totally rebel whenever I can. And so as soon as I get out, it's like, ah, freedom, T-shirt, blue jeans.
Scruff it up. Yeah, I had a selection of like executive secretary gigs for a while and had the whole corporate goth wardrobe. And, you know, when I got out of, I mean, let's face it, writers at home, you know, what are you wearing? I'm wearing a onesie. <You know? laughs> I'm wearing a Snuggie. That's what I work right. in. A Jedi Snuggie. I'm not actually kidding.
So back to Gen Con for just a second, and then we'll talk about some other stuff.
I will not wear the Jedi onesie to to Gen Con.
Sadly, someone else will. And yes. You talked about like you're doing writer stuff, but you're also – so you started playing role-playing games very young. And
I did.
You mentioned before we started recording that you were going to be doing a Pathfinder game.
I believe so. There's a like a tour author exhibition Pathfinder game going on one of these nights. I think it might be Thursday night, but I'm not 100% certain.
Who's running it?
I don't know. As I said, that's three conventions and a book tour away. Gotcha.
I've seen that done now a couple different places, like authors getting together and playing a role playing game. Is like Pathfinder a favorite of yours, or is it just what they're doing? Do you have a favorite game that you normally play, or?
You know, I am such a sad panda. My role playing these days has been so limited by time and travel and all of my friends having, you know, jobs and kids, that my current role playing situation has been a once a month Pathfinder game that we managed to get to about 8 times a year.
Believe me, I understand.
Yeah, and some pickup games of things like Fiasco and Cards Against Humanity and stuff like that that doesn't require the prep time. But when I was running games, what I mostly ran was Call of Cthulhu. A little bit of Cyberpunk 2020 and a fair amount of D&D back in the day.
Okay.
Which would have been first and second edition because I'm old.
Yeah, I've got those. So I completely understand what you're talking about with, you know, the people growing up and having kids on purpose, apparently, which is a whole new thing. I don't understand.
Yeah.
And I can dig the accidental thing, but actually planning for it trips me out. You know, I'm currently driving an hour and a half twice a month one way to play role playing games with people. So I totally get it. Totally get it. Does that side of Gen Con appeal to you at all? Like the gamer side?
God, yeah. Actually, I think most of my Pathfinder game is going to be there. So I could stalk them.
Pickup group.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are aspects of sort of I used to attend. Before we were recording, we were talking about this. I used to attend the Amber Diceless Role Playing Convention, AmberCon in Detroit, and I went to a couple of the other little regional ones, and did a lot of convention role playing in that sort of a setting. I've never been to one this big before, and I have to admit it's a little intimidating. I feel like, especially because, you know, I know I'm rusty. You know, like I am not up on the rules, and it's kind of a kind of sad to me to realize that, you know, I spent 15 years of my life as a pretty decent game master and consistent role player. Now I just roll the dice when they tell me to. I've become that person, you know. It's
like, that's what I've been doing. It's they're like, okay, well, this needs to happen. Okay.
Yeah.
And they look at me like, roll the die. Oh, which one? This one. Oh, okay.
Yeah. When somebody else needs to figure out your modifiers for you, it's a sign that.
Or remind you.
Grampy's coming to the game.
Or remind you that your barbarian has rage.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I've been playing this combat cleric, who I love. I have a soft spot in my heart for combat clerics, and I keep like looking through the spell lists and going, oh man, I never noticed this one before. I'm like, oh, but you know, when I was 20, I had time to pore over that stuff. You know, now. When the game is not actually in progress, the rule books are put away.
Yep. I believe me, I completely understand. And it's funny because I got into this because I started playing Magic the Gathering again after a long break. And it's interesting to see all these people spending huge amounts of time building decks now. And whereas I'm sitting there going, I don't really feel like building a deck. I'll just use this one that I never broke down, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And then them going, wait, what's that card? Wait, where'd that card come from? What game, what expansion is that from? Because now they're looking at my cards going, I haven't seen that. What? You know, kind of freaking out because I've got old cards.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, that's kind of fun. So Gen Con, you're going to be there. Folks can come by. If they bring books or something, are you going to do a signing?
I think there's some sort of facility for signing, but again, this is my first Gen Con. I don't know. I'm playing it by ear. I will sign things. My rule is that I will sign anything except for body parts.
Yeah. Well, it's awkward when they bring them in a little trunk.
Yeah, and they smell bad.
Yeah, it's never good. Never, never good.
And you've always got to be like, where did you get? Was this consensual? Where did you get this from? You know, so.
And the guy's name is Hannibal, and it's just, it's not good. No.
Yes.
So you write books.
I do. Moving on now.
I am.
Yes, I write books for my sins.
How's that going?
So far, so good.
Yeah.
I actually just finished a draft of a short story that I have to hand in at the end of the week. And I have the Eternal Sky trilogy, which I finished. The third book came out last year. We're doing not a continuation of that story, but another trilogy set in that world in a different place 50 years after it.
Yeah, if I remember, last time we spoke, you were pretty adamant that you only wanted it to be like three books.
Yeah.
So it's good that you were able to maintain that, you know, because sometimes we call it feature creep, right? You know, you have, oh gosh, this character is just, they're calling to me and they want six more chapters.
Yeah, no, you cannot have. there may be one or two characters who recur from the from the first trilogy, but they are not protagonists. Mm-hmm. Actually, this particular book centers on a couple of characters who turned up in a short story that I did for Jonathan Strahan some time ago.
Okay.
And a couple of sort of wandering mercenaries and two queens of neighboring kingdoms who get involved in a rapidly escalating political mess. And currently I'm in the process of I've written the first third of the book. So I have hit the middle of the book and is everybody who has written a novel knows that transition from the beginning to the middle is really tough. Mm-hmm. So I'm currently kind of out there with my sketch pad and my plumb line and, you know, a bit of straw stuck between my teeth, wandering around, staring at it and chewing, which doesn't look like work, but actually kind of is. And once that's done, that's a book that's called, the working title is The Stone in the Skull, and I think we're going to keep it. Ooh. And the second thing that I am working on is a book called Ancestral Night, which is a big idea, splashy space opera, sort of in the Ian Banks mode.
Okay.
Only a bit less political and a bit more adventure-y.
I like it.
For Galantz, which should be, and both of these books should be coming out late next year.
Okay. Well,
if all goes according to plan.
Lately I've been in space opera-y mode. That's what I've been reading a lot of. So I'll totally pre-order. Can I pre-order it yet? Have you done? Are
Yay.
You done? Is it ready?
I don't know. No, it's not. It's not. But it's so far we only have a UK release.
Okay.
It hasn't been picked up by a US publisher, but I know there are at least two or three who are interested. So hopefully there will also be a US publication.
Ooh, that'd be awesome.
Woo! Yeah. Well, I like it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're keeping busy.
Yes.
How's Karen Memory doing?
So far so good. I mean, I don't have a royalty report. Okay. Yet, because it's only been out since February.
Okay.
So I won't actually sure. get the first royalty report on that until November because publishing.
Yep. I just learned about all that stuff from Angie Hodapp, who works
yeah.
for Nelson Literary, and she was at Pikes Peak Writers, and she was talking about how that works.
Yeah, everybody makes their 2% off the float except the author is the mm-hmm. way it works. Oh, is that my outside voice? But yeah, basically that's how it works.
You know what we need to do?
We need to
have Taylor Swift write a book.
Yeah.
Because she just got Apple to pay artists for the trial period of the new Apple streaming service.
Yep.
And she totally pulled her stuff off of Spotify because they weren't paying for that either. Mm-hmm. So you just need to get her to write a book, and then she'll go after everybody and get them to pay.
Well, it's similar to some of the clashes that have been going on in the publishing industry with various publishers and Amazon. Mm-hmm. And Amazon wanting to be able to set prices for ebooks as they see fit.
Well, and the big thing, the big talk just before I went to Pikes Peak Writers, which was the last weekend in April. Mm-hmm. And I know we're going way far afield here, but
that's all right.
The big talk just before I went in, and then that was kind of the talk of the whole con with different people, was that there was a debut author whose first book, debut book, the ebook was priced around $20. And that was not a price set by Amazon.
Yeah.
And you know, that was not good.
That does seem a bit much for a
debut author.
On the other hand, you know, what was the hardcover price?
I want to say it was like $18.99 or something.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of weird. I don't know the details, so I can't,
right.
can't pretend to have an opinion.
But it was if it became or becomes a trend, I think it's dangerous. I can't see people paying that much for an ebook.
No, I can't either. And I'm one of those weirdos who basically 50% of my market is hardcover and 50% is ebook, and that's mm-hmm. what I sell. You know, I pick up very few people in trade paperback or mass market paperback readers.
Well, and I'm the buyer who I want to read on my ebook or listen to it on audio, mm-hmm. and then I buy the hardcover and put it on my bookshelf and show people and say, look at the pretty.
Yeah, well, you know, hardcovers are decorative. They also have mm-hmm. a high R value. They're very good insulation. So. Yeah.
Well, I love a hardcover. I really do. I'm one of the few people who will admit that I read and loved The Wheel of Time. And I say that tongue in cheek, because usually I go to WorldCon and people go, you know, what do you like? And I was like, oh, I loved The Wheel of Time. And they're like, I never read it. And once I started getting into it and liking it, I went back and found and bought all the hardcovers. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done that for a lot of books. Kate Elliott's books, the Prince of Dogs, or whatever it was called, The Crown of Stars. You know, I love that. I went back and got hardcovers. So, you know, I seek them out when I want them.
Yeah.
I love
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. I do, too. I mean, there's stuff that I know, airport books, you know, things I'm buying to read on a plane that mm-hmm. I will never look at again, that I perfectly happily buy an ebook. But the stuff that I actually want to have.
Yes.
I am, books I'm buying for reference, especially. I'm much more likely to buy a hard copy of, in part because it's easier to find stuff when you're skimming.
Sure,
you know, it's really hard to skim an ebook.
Yes. Click.
Yeah.
So anyway, the whole point of that conversation was Karen Memory.
Yes, as far as I know, it's doing really well. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback.
This is steampunk.
It is Weird West steampunk.
Okay.
It's not heavily it's not sort of heavily aimed at the steampunk market. It's not, you know. It's not an insider book for the steampunk market.
Okay.
It is. I think of it as a pulp adventure. It happens to have steampunk elements and Wild West elements. But basically, what it is it's heroic, and it has some alternate history elements. But it's heroic saloon girls versus disaster capitalists in a mythical Northwestern Gold Rush City.
The cover is,
oh my God,
ridiculous.
That Cynthia Shepherd.
Is that the artist?
That is her first cover.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I know. She's got a fantastic career in front of her.
Seriously, if you're listening to this right now, go check out this cover. This is gorgeous. I love all the little tentacles and stuff going all around the edges, and
it's magical. Yeah. It is, and she for various reasons she had a really short turnaround time on that cover.
Really,
she knocked. It's like she had like 2 weeks to do it, and she knocked it out of the park.
Wow, she did, absolutely. That is gorgeous cover.
I know. She's been doing, I guess she was doing card art and stuff beforehand, and I think she'll be doing more book covers now.
I think so too. Heck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I suspect she's going to be back.
Wow. No, seriously, I love the art in book covers, and I've told people this for years. I just I'm the guy who wants to buy it and frame it and put it on the wall.
You can.
Ugh.
She's selling poster prints. You can get a lovely full size poster print. I own one.
Does she have a website? Do you know of?
Hang on a second. I have the internet right here. I think it's Shepherd Arts. But I know she's selling posters. She's selling the posters through inprint.com.
Okay.
INPRNT.com.
Fantasy art and illustration by Cynthia Shepherd with two P's. So SHEPPARD. And it's shepherd-arts.com.
Yep. And she's ridiculously good.
She is. Wow.
Everybody should go look at her fabulous art.
This
and
is
buy
really
prints.
Good stuff. now I'm totally yeah, this is the kind
We've
of stuff that's
you.
Great for podcasting, right? It's like we're looking at websites and we're looking at art.
No one will be seated during the art watching the art. What is it? The art appreciation. That's the term. And no one will be seated during the art appreciation portion of this podcast.
We talked a little bit before we were recording about that. I grew up in Fresno. You can't see it right now, but folks who have, I've taken a couple pictures in the past, but when I do interviews, a lot of times if I'm on Google Hangouts with Anelio, behind me is a wall of posters, and one of them happens to be a really old Lord of the Rings poster.
I think we had a conversation about
this.
Yes,
and I saw it in San Francisco when I was a kid on a field trip, and I didn't have the money to buy it. But I later, many, many years later, I was walking through a mall with my friends as a teenager and saw it at a Prince Plus and immediately plunked down like $22 for it or something. And I've had it ever since. So I love to get the art. I really do.
Now, if I remember correctly, that's is it that Alan Lee sepia toned one with all the fussy little details? Yes, that I saw it and I was like, oh my God, I had that in my college dorm room.
And apparently so did everybody else, and just nobody told me.
Now I need to track that down and get myself another copy of it.
Right?
Because now I can't live without it.
Oh, it's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And now I've got some Picasso stuff on my wall that I've been able to get, and you know, I do have an original Galen Dara in a notebook where she doodled for me. So yeah, I just love this stuff.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of Froud and some Michael Kucharski in my office.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, we're running out of time, and we've wasted it talking about art and all kinds of weird stuff. So, Gen Con, again, is that weekend in July. It's in Indianapolis. Go there, see Elizabeth, say hello. Say hello to Maurice and all the other folks. What else have you got going on?
What else have I got going on? Not much right now, actually. I've got two simultaneous book contracts currently. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time, I am so busy with that almost all of my extracurricular activities have kind of fallen by the wayside. We've put the we've been very slow with SF Squeecasting, as you've probably noticed.
Yep.
Because we've all been so busy.
Sure.
We've been. Shadow Unit has reached the end of its run, and its first run anyway. We're planning on doing some because it's a virtual television show. You know, we have to have the reunion movie and then the ill-advised reboot series. So we have plans for that.
Nice,
but not right now. Emma Bull has to finish a certain novel first.
Okay,
Emma, yeah. If you're listening,
But you said you had multiple conventions. You have three.
I have multiple. Right. I'm doing Fourth Street Fantasy this weekend, which will be long over by the time this podcast airs.
Yeah.
Convergence after that.
Okay.
Then ReaderCon.
Okay.
Then I'm on a 3-week book tour.
Nice.
Then Gen Con. Then I have to sit down and type for 2 weeks. Then WorldCon, that thing in Spokane.
Yes, I'll be there.
Yes, I will see you there,
yes.
I'm sure, amidst the other 10,000 people.
Yes, I'll be the tall one.
I will be the one in the t-shirt and cargo pants. look for the girl with the long brown hair and the nerdy t-shirt.
Yeah,
that'll work.
That'll work.
Yeah, that'll work. And then I have then I think I'm off the hook until World Fantasy, except for I'm teaching Viable Paradise again this year, which is a East Coast writing workshop.
Do you have any of the details of the book tour yet?
Yes, actually, I can.
Any chance you're going to hit Tattered Cover in Denver?
No, it's okay. So this is going to be actually a lot of fun. It's going to be the Northeast only.
Okay.
It is going to be me. James Cambius, Brian Staveley, and Max Gladstone in like a rented Subaru. We're trying to talk Artie Alsbeck, who's our publicist, into giving us a GoPro. And we are going to be driving all over the Northeast doing bookstore events together. I am pretty sure this is going to be one part Muppet movie, one part Fury Road, one part Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Well, see, and I went a completely different place. I immediately in my brain, I started hearing the music from Vacation. Holiday Road.
Don't do that.
No. You're going to end up at Wally World.
No, we're not. Okay, so we're gonna Tuesday, July 14th, Harvard Bookstore at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. Thursday, July 16th, we are going to be at Pandemonium Books and Games. Hi, Pandy Books! we're going to be playing Pathfinder there, actually,
nice.
At 7 p.m. for 2 or 3 hours. Then on Friday, July 17th, we're going to be at the Odyssey Bookshop at Mount Holyoke College at 6 p.m. Saturday, July 18th, at 1 p.m., we will be at the Simsbury Library in Simsbury, Connecticut. Scenic Simsbury. I grew up in Connecticut, so. And then Sunday, July 19th, we will be at Bank Square Books in Mystic, Connecticut at 1 p.m.
What I'm loving is it sounds like these are all independent bookstores, which is awesome.
Yes, they are. They are all independent bookstores or libraries.
That's awesome.
On Monday, July 20th at 7 p.m., we will be at the Ferguson Library in Stamford, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And then we will be Wednesday, July 22nd, we will be at Town Book Center in Collegeville, Philadelphia. That is the southernmost point of our tour.
Okay.
And then we will be at on Friday, July 24th, we will be at the Northshire Bookstore in Saratoga Springs, New York at 6 p.m. And this is all available on the tour website.
Oh, so I was going to ask, who's Tor is the sponsor on this?
Tor is everybody's publisher.
So Tor, what
would be in Brattleboro, Vermont.
What up, Tor? Where's the love for Tattered Cover?
Well, get them to send in a request.
Anyway, you had one more.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Brattleboro, Vermont at Everyone's Books. And then Sunday, July 26th, Phoenix Books in Burlington, Vermont. And then we get to go home and I get to sleep for 3 days before Gen Con.
Very cool.
Oh, this is like my first no kidding book tour. So this should be exciting.
That sounds very exciting. So, website, ElizabethBear.com.
ElizabethBear.com. The website badly in need of updating. I'm trapped in a 3-column WordPress hell and really need to do something about that, but it's not going to happen this week.
Twitter, Facebook?
Twitter, I am Matto Sequala basically everywhere in the world.
Okay.
Everywhere on the internets. It is MattoSiquala. And that's on Twitter, Tumblr, LiveJournal. I still have a LiveJournal. Me and George Martin, baby.
And Stina. Stina Light.
Stina Light. Yep. That's it. Somebody has to hold down the fort. Ello, although I never... Does anybody go to Ello?
Hey, I remember paying for LiveJournal so I could get better emoticons.
I have, you see, I can't leave because I have the permanent LiveJournal account.
Ah.
Gotcha. So I forked over the $100 for the permanent account and, you know, I'm invested now.
You are. Yep. Well, this has been so much fun. I really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us. Is there anything you'd like to tell listeners before I let you go?
Come out and see me someplace.
Yeah. She's going to be all over the place.
I am.
Except for Tattered Cover, but that's okay.
Yeah, I'm not making it to the West Coast this year.
Okay. Well,
maybe next
except
year.
For Spokane.
Well, that's not really the West Coast. The West Coast denies any connection with Spokane. but yes, I will be in Spokane. I was in Arizona earlier this year, so you missed your chance if you didn't get out there. Southwest. But that's it. No Southeast this year, and Minneapolis is coming up real soon. So
understood. Is there anything you want to squee about before I let you go?
Oh, my goodness. This is not actually science fiction related, but I've been reading Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror, which is her massive, incredible tome on the 13th century. And it's fantastic. It's fabulous. And I would just like to force everybody writing generic European medieval history badly. I just want to chain them to a chair and force them to listen to the audiobook. Because like everything that annoys you about bad medieval fantasy, if you read this book, you would stop doing it. It has economics, it has politics, it has social history, it has everything. And the Black Death.
There you go.
So, and popes declaring each other heretics and just everything you could possibly want from a history.
That's awesome. All right. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Have a great evening.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends, and so on, and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF&F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.